What are you afraid of? What are you most afraid of? What do you think the culture is most terrified of? What is our biggest phobia, if you had to guess? Well, if the way that we spend our money is anything to go by, it would seem that one of our biggest phobias is getting old. Getting old. Not being young anymore. Losing our youth. We do everything we can to stay looking young. I was looking at all the surveys this week, and one recent survey suggested that the average woman apparently spends nearly a year of her life putting on makeup and fixing her hair. She spends £100,000 on cosmetics over the course of a lifetime. £100,000! And before you blokes start feeling complacent, apparently the average male is not far behind. It is a $160 billion a year global industry. $160 billion. Makeup, skincare, hair care, fragrances, cosmetic surgery, health clubs, diet pills, spas. In America, they spend more each year on beauty than they do on education. And this is the point where you expect the preacher to say, "What a disgrace. What an absolute disgrace." But actually, if chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes is true, and it's no wonder we're so fearful of old age. No wonder at all. If what Solomon says here is true about old age, there is very, very little to commend it. Very, very little. And so the message of Solomon this morning is, don't waste your youth. Don't waste it. Let me give you three headings. Firstly, if you're making notes, firstly, he talks about the days of your youth. That's chapter 11, verses 9 and 10. Secondly, the days of trouble. That's the way that Solomon describes old age. That's chapter 12, verses 1 to 8. And then thirdly, he talks about the day of judgment. That's chapter 12, verses 9 to 14. So firstly, let's look at the days of your youth. Youth, somebody once said, is wasted on the young. Youth is wasted on the young. We don't realise how precious youth is until we've lost it. There's an old movie called City Slickers. It's a Billy Crystal film. I don't know if any of you have seen it. But there's this brilliant scene where he's standing in front of these primary school kids. They're only like 5 or 6 years old. And he does this speech about how they should value their youth. And this is what he says. He says, "Value this time in your life, kids, because this is the time in your life when you still have your choices. And it goes by so quickly. When you're a teenager, you think you can do anything. And you do. Your 20s are a blur. Your 30s, you raise your family, you make a little money, you think to yourself, what happened to my 20s? Your 40s, you grow a little pot belly, you grow another chin, the music starts to get too loud and one of your old girlfriends from high school becomes a grandmother. Your 50s, you have a minor surgery. You'll call it a procedure, but it's a surgery. Your 60s, you have a major surgery, the music is still loud, but it doesn't matter because you can't hear it anyway. 70s, you and the wife retire to Fort Lauderdale, you start eating dinner at 2, lunch around 10, breakfast the night before. And you spend most of your time wandering around malls looking for the ultimate in soft yogurt and muttering, how come the kids don't call? By your 80s, you've had a major stroke and you end up babbling to some Jamaican nurse who your wife can't stand but who you call Mama. Any questions? That's what he says. And actually, it's quite similar to what we have here in Ecclesiastes. It's quite similar. At the end of chapter 11, Solomon says, if you're young, you should enjoy it. You should. Value this time in your life. It's God's gift to you. Verse 9. Be happy, young man or woman, while you're young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. There is nothing wrong with enjoying your youth. Nothing. Don't feel that you have got to be an old person before your time. You don't. Some people, and we all know them, seem to think it's a virtue to behave as if they are 40 years older than they actually are. You met those people? You know, given half the chance, some of you would hoard copies of Reader's Digest, you'd drive at 5 miles an hour, and you would spend all of your disposable income on Werther's Originals. But what does Solomon say here? He says, enjoy your youth, allow yourself to be happy. Look at verse 10. Banish anxiety from your heart, and cast off the troubles of your body. Why? Because youth and vigour are meaningless. Meaningless, that's that word we've heard loads of times in Ecclesiastes. It has a very specific meaning in Ecclesiastes. It means vapour. It's like on a winter's morning when you breathe out and you see your breath for a moment and then it's gone. It's gone. You cannot hold on to it. And that is what youth and vigour are like, according to Solomon here. It's it's meaningless. It's a vapor. So he says, enjoy it. Don't waste it. Give yourself permission to enjoy the days of your youth. In fact, don't just give yourself permission. God commands that you do this. Use your youth, your energy, your fitness, your freedom to the full. And just to be clear, when he says, verse 9, follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see, I checked on that. That's not Hebrew for get hammered and get naked. It's not. I've been through all the commentaries. That's not what it means. All right? How do we know? Well, look at the end of verse 9. He says, know that for all these things, God will bring you to judgment. So he's saying, as you seek to enjoy your youth, don't settle for counterfeit joys. Don't be too easily pleased. Don't settle for the counterfeit joys of extramarital sex or drunkenness or triviality. Don't be too easily pleased. If you do that, you will have wasted your youth, and God will bring you to judgment. Pursue real joy. The joy, the deep joy, the profound joy that can only be found in God alone. That's what he's saying. Pursue him with all the strength of your youth. So that's the teacher's first point. Remember your Creator as you enjoy the days of your youth. Because, let's face it, if you can't enjoy your youth, you're going to hate old age. You're going to hate it. That's our second heading, the days of trouble, chapter 12, verses 1 to 8. Just look at chapter 12, verse 1, if you would. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. The days of trouble, that's the way Solomon describes old age. Literally, he calls them the days of evil. That's the original. And nowadays, because average life expectancy is rising in the West, it's very fashionable to say life begins at 60, or something like that. Life begins at 60. So, for example, here's a recent headline from the Daily Mail. It says this: old age is simply a state of mind. Old age is simply a state of mind. Well, here's the headline from Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Old age is definitely not a state of mind. It's not. You know this, especially if you've had to look after elderly parents. Old age is very real, and it is, verse 1, trouble. It's trouble. What we have here in verses 1 to 8 is Solomon's description of old age. It's a very wise, very old man speaking ruefully about what it's like to be old. It's a motorway pile-up of metaphors here. That's what's going on. And all of them say the same thing. Old age is miserable. It's really, really tough. So look at verse 2. Verse 2, the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark, so you gradually lose your eyesight. Verse 2, and the clouds return after the rain. When you get old, it's just one sickness after another. You get rid of one ailment, another one takes its place. The rain goes, but immediately the clouds return. You're permanently dealing with pain of one kind or another. Everything's a huge effort. You bend down to tie your shoelaces. It is such an effort. You think to yourself, I wonder if there's anything else I can do while I'm down here. Verse 3, the keepers of the house tremble. You get shaky, your muscles get weak, your joints become inflexible. You walk up the stairs and you think the floorboard's creaking and you realise the sound's coming from your knees. Verse 3, and the strong men stoop. You look like you're giving a piggyback to an invisible elephant, and it feels like it. It really feels like it. Verse 3, when the grinders cease because they're few, your teeth fall out. It's desperate. You can no longer eat pork scratchings. I mean, imagine that. Terrible thing to happen. The last time was when you were 50, when you broke so many teeth, people thought that your mouth was a scale reconstruction of Stonehenge. Agony. These days, when you say you're sinking your teeth into something, it means you're dropping them into a glass of water by your bedside. That's what it means. Verse 3, and those looking through the windows grow dim. Your memory goes. You walk into the kitchen. You have no idea what you came in for. You spend all day looking for your glasses, and then somebody points out you're wearing them. Verse 4, when the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, you can't work anymore. When men rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint, you wake up early in the morning for no reason at all, your hearing goes. Verse 5, when men are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets, you are afraid of everything and everyone. Your reflexes have slowed right down, so the rest of the world seems like it's moving at a terrifying pace. You get angry at people quickly, not just because of the chronic pain, but because you're scared. You're scared. Verse 5, when the almond tree blossoms, your hair, if you have any, goes white. And as far as you can tell, most of it seems to be coming out of your ears. Verse 5, and the grasshopper drags himself along. You've got no energy. You are permanently tired. Verse 5, and the desire is no longer stirred. Well, that means exactly what you think it means. Verse 5, then man goes to his eternal home and mourners go about the streets. Verse 6, remember him. Remember your Creator. Before the silver cord is severed or the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring or the wheel is broken at the well. In other words, remember your Creator before everything stops working. Remember your Creator before you find yourself living in a body that you no longer recognize. Before you find yourself living in a body that rebels against you and refuses to do what it used to do without effort and makes you feel as if you're in a prison. Before you find yourself helplessly doing exactly the kind of things you once did when you were a baby, dribbling, incontinent. Only this time it's going to be much less cute. Remember your Creator, says Solomon. Before that happens, before, verse 7, the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Meaningless. Meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. Everything is a vapor. Not just youth, but old age too. It's gone. Cradle to grave, it's a vapor. Now, why is it so important? Why is it so important, verse 1, to remember your Creator before these days of trouble come? Why is it so important to do that before the storm hits? Yes, it's obviously important because it's easy to take youth for granted. That's one thing. But I think there's something else. I think there's something else here. I want to suggest that it's because you cannot put up storm defences during a storm. You can't. Old age is the worst storm you can imagine. And it's coming. It is coming. There is no shelter from it. It brings with it enormous physical and emotional vulnerability. And with that physical and emotional vulnerability comes spiritual vulnerability. Great vulnerability to sin. It's not hard, if you think about it, it's not hard to name respected Christians who have lived very godly lives, have been very wise people, but as they reached the end of their life, they did or they said or they taught things which they shouldn't have taught, things they shouldn't have done, things they shouldn't have said. Even the wisest, most gifted ones, we can all think of them. People like King Solomon. People like King Solomon himself. When he was young, we know the story, we've been hearing about it over the last few weeks, God granted him everything. His wisdom was unparalleled. His wealth was unparalleled. He was staggeringly glorious in every way. It was amazing. God, the Lord, actually appeared to him twice. He was incredibly good to King Solomon. God was incredibly good to him. But then in 1 Kings 11, we read this. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods. And his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So he was a man of matchless wisdom, matchless means, matchless privilege. And then the storm of old age hit. And he was swept away. He was swept away. The defences were not strong enough. All it took, by the way, was for him to stop being fully devoted to the Lord. It's not as if he didn't love God. He did. He loved God, but he loved other gods too. In his old age, his heart was divided, and soon afterwards, as a result, the whole kingdom was divided too. As a result, all because Solomon in his old age did not remember his Creator who'd given him everything. Everything. It says in 1 Kings 11, the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. So the Lord said to Solomon, since this is your attitude, and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees, which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom from you. God judges Solomon. He punishes Solomon. Even Solomon. God takes Solomon's mighty kingdom from him. He raises up enemies who try to overthrow him. And then he dies. That's it. Friends, don't think that because you call yourself a Christian, you will escape the repercussions of your sin. Don't make that mistake. Because it's so easy to think, isn't it? It's so easy for us to think, well, Christ paid for my sin. He paid for it. It's no big deal. He will forgive me. He will forgive me. But God's judgment in this life is not something to be trifled with, as Solomon discovered in his old age. If you love other things other than God, if your heart is divided, well, then there will be consequences in the world that God has made. And the pleasure that you gain will not be worth the pain. It won't be worth the pain. The end of Ecclesiastes, like the end of Solomon himself, reminds us that it's just so easy. It's very easy to sin in old age. Too easy. Why was Solomon so vulnerable to sin late in his life? Well, I think for two reasons as we look at his life. Ask yourself if these things might be true of you. Firstly, after a life of God's blessing, he started taking that blessing for granted. He'd become so used to it. God's blessing had been poured out on him again and again and again through his life. He became king of Israel at the age of 41. I mean, unparalleled blessing. Wisdom like the world had never seen. People came from miles around to practically worship him. It's extraordinary. He had it all. And he became complacent. He became complacent. He took it for granted that God would always smile on him. How easy it is for lifelong Christians to do the same as they get older. And then secondly, in his old age, as he got complacent, here's the thing, as he got complacent, he began to love his sin more than he loved God. It's tragic. He began to love his sin more than he loved God. After all that God had done for him. He wanted romance, he wanted sensual fulfillment more than he wanted the Lord. He thought it could make him happier than God could make him. And so he justified it to himself and he took what he wanted. And God's judgment fell. God's judgment fell on him. It is a stark warning. And that, friends, brings us to our third point, the day of judgment. The day of judgment, verses 9 to 14. This is the conclusion of the whole book. This is where the voice of the narrator breaks in at this point. He distills all of Solomon's wisdom into one statement. Here it comes, verse 13. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So here it is. This is the sum total of all of Solomon's extraordinary wisdom. Fear God and keep his commandments. Fear God and keep his commandments. Why? Verse 14, because God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil. See, it's interesting, isn't it? Because what the culture fears most of all is getting old. That's what the culture fears most of all. But actually, what we should fear most of all is what lies beyond that. That's what we should fear most of all. What we should fear most, particularly if we know the state of our own hearts, if we're honest, what we should fear is God and his perfectly just judgment. I don't know if you noticed, but God and his judgment are the only realities in Ecclesiastes that are not said to be meaningless. It's interesting. So as you look back over the whole of Ecclesiastes, all 12 chapters, you see all the things that are declared to be meaningless. So you'll remember there's you know, pleasures are meaningless, wisdom is meaningless, folly is meaningless, toil, advancement, much dreaming and many words are meaningless, wealth, laughter, youth and vigour, meaningless. All of them are a vapour, they're all just passing away. But God and his judgment will never pass away. We will one day face him. And our lives will be judged. All we've done. All we've not done. And I hope you can see how that transforms the meaninglessness of existence. God's judgment gives tremendous weight to our lives. Tremendous weight. Now, I don't mean that we should only do good things because God is watching us and God will judge us if we don't. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, when we recognize, verse 14, that God will bring every deed into judgment, it shows us that every deed matters to him. It really matters to him. It shows that there's no such thing as an insignificant act or an insignificant word. Things that would otherwise be meaningless become meaningful. The way we treat others matters, really matters profoundly. The way we treat God matters eternally. God and his judgment will never pass away. But there's something else that will never pass away. Something else. In Matthew 24, Jesus says, "Even heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away." You see, the wasted life, whether you're young or old, the wasted life is the one which gives itself to those things which will pass away. That's the wasted life. As C.S. Lewis says, don't let your happiness depend on something that you may lose. And I wonder this morning, could that be you? Could that be you? Is your happiness dependent on something you may lose, something that is passing away, something that is, to use this word from Ecclesiastes, meaningless, a vapor that's gone? Like Solomon, has your happiness somehow become dependent on something that is not God? And particularly if you're an older Christian, have you started looking in other places for the contentment that only God brings, like Solomon did? Because I don't know if you felt it. Did you feel it as we were hearing that chapter read out? Did you feel the sadness of it at the end? I think there's tremendous sadness in that last few paragraphs. It just feels kind of downbeat. There's nothing particularly uplifting about it. And that is because the end of Solomon's life was far from uplifting. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. We know that there is a greater Solomon. We know. Solomon's described here in verse 11 as a great shepherd. And he was. He was for many years. But there is a greater shepherd. One who, like Solomon, faced God's judgment for sin. Except this shepherd didn't die for his own sin, because this shepherd was perfectly sinless. This shepherd died for the sin of his people. He took God's judgment instead of them. So that when the day of judgment comes and God exposes every hidden deed, each one of his people will be able to say, I know I deserve your judgment, but Jesus took it for me. Your son took it for me. My shepherd took it for me. Do you remember the Queen of Sheba from a few weeks back? Queen of Sheba was this amazing queen who came to see King Solomon because his reputation preceded him. She'd heard what an amazing kingdom he had, all of the wealth, all of the grandeur, all of the majesty. So she travels for miles to come and see King Solomon. And then when she arrives, when she's there and she's seen all that he is, all that he has, do you remember how the Bible describes it? It says that she is literally, it's as if she had no more breath in her. It's an amazing phrase. It literally means she was literally breathless at the sight of this grandeur, this majesty, this glory. And she was a queen herself, right? So she's used to grandeur, majesty, glory. She's used to all of that. But she sees this and she's breathless. Can you imagine how staggering Solomon must have been in all his glory? Can you imagine? Just beyond thought. Well, in Luke 11:31, Jesus makes a striking statement. He says, "The Queen of Sheba will rise at the judgment with the people of this generation and condemn them. For she came from the ends of the earth to listen to Solomon's wisdom, and now one greater than Solomon is here." One greater than Solomon. Do you hear what Jesus is saying? He's saying, she traveled for miles to listen to King Solomon, but now someone much greater than Solomon is here. He's standing right in front of you. He's talking to you. And you are not listening. Jesus says there will be a day of judgment. And the ones who will be condemned on that day will be the ones who did not listen to him. Someone greater than Solomon is here. An infinitely greater shepherd. An infinitely wiser king. Will you listen to him? Let's pray. Father, you know we're a relatively young church in every sense. We are young, and we long to obey the counsel of Solomon here in your word. We long to make the most of that youth, make the best of our fitness and our freedom in order to live life fully for you, in order to pursue you and the joy that is in you. Father, would you give us the strength by your Spirit to do that, to realize how much of a vapor youth and vitality is? And Father, for those of us who are older, would you, Lord, would you keep us from becoming complacent as Solomon did? Would you keep us obedient to your word in every way? Would you keep us mindful of the fact that your judgment will fall if we are careless with our sin? And Father, for those who don't know you, who you are calling this morning, would you open ears? Would you work a miracle so that your Son Jesus can be seen for who he is, the infinitely greater shepherd, the infinitely wiser king? In his name we pray. Amen.